This is Stephen Adams.
And this is Kevin Durant.
Kevin Durant. You Kevin Durant, mate? Good to see you, mate. Different complexion.
Okay, let's go.
So, this is Stephen Adams.
And this is Enes Kanter.
You're listening to the Down to Earth...
Down to Dunk podcast.
What? Down to Dunk.
Down to Dunk.
I'll say that.
Dunk.
Introduce yourself, mate.
Here's Stephen Adams, and I'm Enes Kanter.
And you're listening to Down to Dunk podcast.
Stay tuned.
Welcome to the Down to Dunk podcast. This is your host, Andrew Schlecht. With me, John Hamm, are you well this week?
I am much better compared to last week. Oh my God, I'm 100,050% better.
Are you ready for Thanksgiving?
I am. I should be sufficiently cleared out by this point. So yeah, I'm ready to load up.
John Hamm, what's your favorite Thanksgiving food? And then tell me the most overrated Thanksgiving food.
Well, ham.
Oh, I mean, yeah. The hottest ham.
Obviously. Yes, the hottest ham, which I'm going to try that this year in a smoker.
Ooh.
I've got this. My father-in-law got me this contraption. It's called a pit barrel cooker. It's like a 30-gallon drum with rebar at the top. And so you actually hang your food in there and you drop your charcoal in the bottom. It makes just the best stuff ever. I've done ribs, I've done chicken, I've done... Oh yeah, it's if they
so
if
good.
I would advertise with them if they would just reach out to me because I love their product. So, but yeah, I'm gonna try some ham in that thing, and we'll see how it goes.
Awesome. Most overrated Thanksgiving food?
I feel like it's pumpkin pie.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I really do.
Do you?
It's just
you would.
I don't know.
You
cream use it Thanksgiving and Christmas, and
yeah.
It's kind of overused.
I like it. I can't get enough. I can't say I'm on the train, but I am definitely on the spice cake train. I don't know if you're on the spice cake train. If you're not on it, get on now because it's leaving and it's delicious.
Well, that's interesting.
Have you had a spice cake?
I've had spice cake before.
Dude, it's so good.
But I just want to have a spice cake podcast
right now, if that's okay with you.
My wife is actually looking to make... I don't know if she's going to go full blown or not, but the Chirpumple.
Oh,
have you heard of this?
No.
Okay, it's gluttonous is what it is. it's cherry pie, apple pie, and pumpkin pie, all baked around a cake. So you put in like a cake mix, and it's like different layers.
Yeah, I've never heard of this. Can you send me a picture of it, please?
Oh, I sure will.
Okay, good.
Chirpumple.
I'm really excited at least to just see it. So the hot ham player of the week, I talked about this before we started talking, but is going to be this Rudy Gay trade rumor that won't die, John Hamm. It won't die. Just like nothing at Anchordown will make you die because it's so delicious. All the corn dogs, so delicious. Go watch Thunder Games. There's tons of Thunder Games going on right now over this Thanksgiving break week. So if you have family that's in town, take them to go watch a Thunder Game at Anchor Down. It's be a great place to host, you know, friends and family, and a great place to eat a corn dog, grab a beer, relax on this Thanksgiving week. So hit up Anchor Down. And then also, John Hamm, why won't this Rudy Gay trade rumor die?
Because it hasn't happened yet.
Do you think that's all I can think of. Do you think it's going to happen?
I don't know. The fact that it's still got this much steam months later, because this has been, you know, this has been talked about off and on, predating, I think, what Woj reported. I think it's been going off and on for quite a while. Mm-hmm. So basically, we've talked about it a lot. I don't think it's a great fit. I understand where people say Rudy Gay is not the answer to any question and et cetera, et cetera. I kind of stepped back for a little bit and tried to look at it from a different angle. And just when I watch the Thunder play offense, I just see the lane is clogged with humanity.
Mm-hmm.
It's just the opposing defenses, they just pack in the paint and just dare the Thunder to shoot. And we saw against Indiana the other day. I mean, the Thunder had open shots they just couldn't connect on. So I came back around to that Rudy Gay idea. It's like, okay, you know, let's look at the reality here. The Thunder won't have salary cap room next summer to go chase anybody. They're probably just going to have the mid-level exception, which is expected to be around $8 million, but that's going to get you Brian Cardinal from back in the day, that type Cardinal. Of player.
Yeah.
Brian Cardinal.
Yeah.
Jerome James. It's going to get you that type of a talent in this in this new economy. The Thunder are going to have to trade in order to get, you know, in order to improve the team. Basically, they're not going to be able to rely on free agency.
No.
So, I mean, look, Rudy Gay's a 20-point per game scorer, and given what we're seeing right now with the Thunder offense, and it's just guys aren't hitting shots, defenses are sagging off. Some improvement needs to be made somewhere. It's probably better to pursue that trade than not, if there's nothing else that really becomes available.
So what's the trade in your mind? Like, what would be going to Sacramento for Rudy Gay?
Yeah. I mean, we've gone back and forth over, you know, does Cameron Payton make much sense, you know, giving up that, a young player for a veteran like Rudy Gay. And also, yeah, I've seen some people have tweeted in on previous podcasts, you know, why go trade for Rudy Gay when he can just leave this summer? I don't think it's a given that he would.
Sure.
Necessarily. So now he is on the older end of the spectrum in terms of players the Thunder acquire, and you know, he'll be 31 next year, and I don't think that they would be excited about locking him up for 4 years. But, you know, who knows? Maybe they know a bunch of stuff that we don't. If it took Cameron Payne to offload Kyle Singler in the same trade, it might be worth it.
That's true.
It might be worth it. So
Cam, Kyle, and who else?
You know, a lot of it depends on, because the Thunder are right now, you know, technically over the salary cap, but that's because they have that Ersan Ilyasova trade exception.
Right.
And they also have that small room exception, which I know the Thunder were wanting to hang on to, just because you never know when you might need that to go, you know, bring in a guy. If they wanted to bring in like a Mario Chalmers, maybe that cap exception mm-hmm. becomes valuable when bidding against other teams. So, it's possible they renounce the exception, fall under the cap enough, and then you combine, let's say, you know, Singler, Morrow, Payne. Maybe you need to bring back another small salary back from Sacramento. I mean, there's a number of ways you can slice it. I don't think it would be anything centered around like Enes Kanter. I really don't.
No, I don't think that makes sense. For either team, we discussed that before.
Really, yeah, Sacramento doesn't need that. And
hey, the trade machine says that the Thunder get 9 wins with a Kyle Singler, Anthony Morrow, Cameron Payne trade.
we'll do it.
Let's do that today.
And I'm not even looking at, you know, because we've talked about this before. What does it really matter if the Thunder get 49 versus 46 wins
right.
and things like that? I just feel like maybe that, you know, the struggles offensively are really counterproductive because Steven Adams has no room to work. Russ can't do those little pocket passes because, again, there's so much humanity in the paint that it just gets picked off. Mm-hmm. You can't run those little lob plays for Steven Adams because there's so many people in the paint. So and that's where I came back to, okay, is it really the worst thing in the world if they pursued such a trade? And there's also the possibility, too, that, that's being put out there and the Thunder are actually looking to go in a totally different direction that we're not anticipating.
Yeah. And I mean, and people have pointed to this too, that, you know, Brook Lopez was the guy that was on the Thunder's radar 2 seasons ago, like all season. All we heard was about these Brook Lopez rumors. Like, when are they going to trade for Brook Lopez? And then the Thunder ended up trading for Enes Kanter. So, I mean, it could be like one of those like kind of diversions. I don't know if the Brook Lopez deal was a diversion, but it just seemed like the Thunder seemed pretty focused on getting a big guy.
It was that. It was also creating leverage. So,
sure.
You know, you go to Utah and like, look, we're getting ready to pull a trigger on this Brook Lopez deal. Do we have a trade or not? Mm-hmm. You know, so, you know, let's say that the Thunder are working on some other trade somewhere and they go to that team and say, look, if you don't lower your demands, we're just going to go trade for Rudy Gay and we're done here. So that's what I think a lot of it is just creating leverage when, you know, maybe something doesn't when leverage isn't there, you got to manufacture it somehow.
Mm-hmm. I've never been a fan of Rudy Gay or his game. I think he's very ISO heavy. He's more of a mid-range shooter than he is a distant shooter. He is shooting 41% from three this season, which is the best that he's ever shot. I don't expect that to continue. Yeah, exactly.
Sorry, guys. Sorry.
But he's only taking 18% of his shots from three. It's less than last year, the year before, than he was in Sacramento. And he's shooting 50% from the corner, which is, I mean, that's obviously that's good, and that's something that the Thunder would want. I guess the idea is that, and this was in Zach Lowe's article, that you bring in Rudy Gay as your small forward, and then you shift Andre Robertson back to shooting guard, and then you put Oladipo on the bench. How do you feel like Oladipo would handle that kind of like quote unquote demotion? And like, how does that like gel with like the chemistry of this team and whatnot? And I feel like Rudy Gay's maybe even better as a four, and then like you don't want to do this a bonus. Like, it just obviously the Thunder needs somebody new to come in and score and to make the offense look a little bit better, but I just wonder how all that looks or what that looks like in the locker room.
Yeah, I think obviously a lot of it depends on how you sell this. You know, hey, Vic, we got you a new role.
Yeah.
You're going to flourish because we're going to do X, Y, and Z. And by the way, you've got your money already. Yeah. So it's not like you're, you know, it's going to affect your free agency status. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, you and others, and as well as myself, we're kind of interested to see, well, what if they didn't use Samaje Christen as the backup point guard and used Oladipo instead? And that worked, at least for one game, that seemed to work pretty well against the Pacers. So I think that there might be a model there where Victor Oladipo basically comes in as a reserve at both guard spots. Abrines is your deep threat. And and the other thing that sticks in my mind too is something that Billy Donovan said in one of his pregame press conferences, where he talked about shifting Andre Robertson back to his more natural shooting guard position. And it just made me think, oh, okay, well, that's clearly where they want him to be, and we're just trying to get by until that can resolve itself.
Is that weird to you? Like, I feel like he's more of a forward than he is a shooting guard, though. I know he's really good at guarding those guys, but man, like,
yeah, and maybe that's where he's coming from. Offensively, you're exactly right. I don't think we need to get back to Andre Robertson just parking in the corner and, you know, hoisting threes. But defensively, he's going to guard the best perimeter player no matter what. Mm-hmm. And he said that in media day, and that's shown throughout the season. So, I don't know. I mean, clearly they have an idea on what they want to do there. And, you know, whether it's Rudy Gay or someone else, I think they want to shift someone else into that small forward spot.
Yeah, I really felt like I was really missing something when I heard that. But I mean, they want to play big, and if you want to play big, then it makes sense to bring in a guy like Wilson Chandler, Rudy Gay, Gallo, somebody like that to come in, and then shift Andre Robertson back, and then I agree with this. I'm not saying that I don't think that they should do this with Oladipo. I think Oladipo would be just a fantastic sixth man. He's also played really well alongside Russell Westbrook. So it's kind of I don't know, there's give and take here with bringing in a guy. I also think the Thunder need veterans that can play. They have so many young guys that are playing right now that are still really kind of feeling their way through the NBA game and through fitting in with this team, that they could really use somebody who has a defined skill, that they have a defined career, and this is what I do. And that's kind of and I've been a major hater on this Rudy Gay deal, but I do think that he would help this team this season. I just wonder if the long-term assets are worth giving up for him. That's my only question.
Yeah, and I'm with you on that. And, you know, as we've talked before, giving up a lottery pick like Payne for a potential short timer, that is not a Sam Presti move. That's just not the type of move he makes. But, you know, who knows? What if such a deal brought back Willie Cauley-Stein? as part of that, as part of this transformation. I mean, maybe that, you know, you just have to wait and see if the trade actually happened, what the complete package was, before you could really scrutinize it.
Yeah, bringing back Cauley Stein would, I mean, I would be super excited about that, because then you bring a big guy in that can actually play defense, and he's a guy that can move his feet all the way out on the perimeter. He can switch out. I'd be really probably be more excited about him than Rudy Gay, even though Rudy Gay would be way more productive than Cauley Stein.
Right, right.
But yeah, that's interesting. Let's go to some Twitter questions.
Let's do it.
From at J Hollis Hoops. James Hollis is snotty dripping, or he was snotty dripping, not anymore, but James is on our podcast.
He's matured.
That's right. He's matured a lot. He was on the pod with John Hamm a few weeks ago. If you don't follow him, you should. But James asked us, your dream scenario, you trade Cantor plus Singler plus picks for what large contract top 15 player to fit with Russ?
Anthony Davis.
LeBron James would be nice.
Granted. Yeah, LeBron would fit in for Dell. Let's see, anywhere.
Here's one that
he's off the table.
Yeah. Assuming LeBron's off the table, yes. Let's go ahead and make that assumption. The Hawks have been really good, but let's say that the Hawks aren't any good, and the Thunder can make a trade. Enes Kanter, Kyle Singler, Cameron Payne, future first-round pick for Paul Millsap and Kyle Korver. They're older, but they would certainly make this offense look 1,000 times better.
Yeah, they would. They would. And getting a couple of guys out of the Hawks system that know about ball movement would certainly be a benefit. So,
You have Kyle Korver teach Alex Abrines how to be him.
Yeah.
That would be cool.
I have a thing about Enes Kanter here, because I feel like at some point he's going to be traded.
Yeah.
I feel like he's going to go somewhere where he's going to start and he's going to average 20 and 10.
Yes.
I feel like this is going to happen.
Yeah, I mean, he would have crazy numbers right now if Steven Adams wasn't on the Thunder.
Yeah. So he's valuable. Yeah. I mean, yes, there are defensive issues, but in the right situation, you know, I think you could mitigate some of that. Enes Kanter is an NBA player that would help a few teams right now.
Sure.
So, I'm looking across the league. There's a few places I think he could potentially fit in, like Dallas, like Portland, potentially Boston. I mean, I wonder about Horford Kanter as a front line. It's kind of interesting. I don't know. James Hollis might have something to say about that.
So let's just do a trade that'll make James really mad and trade all the good players from Boston to Oklahoma City. Jay Crowder, Avery Bradley for Enes Kanter. How do you feel about that?
But it also about, you know, Jay Crowder. I really like Jay Crowder, but I also feel like the internet has inflated him a little too much.
Oh yeah.
No, I mean, he's a really good player.
Yeah.
But just because he's on a low salary and he does some nice things doesn't mean he's, like, untradeable.
Right.
And I kind of feel like that's how the internet has puffed him up. Like, oh, you just can't trade this guy unless you're getting a superstar. I don't agree. Yeah,
there were talks like they couldn't include Jay Crowder in a Kevin Love trade. I'm like, what? Like, how is that even?
Why not?
How is that not a sentence? Like, how is that a sentence?
Yeah.
That doesn't make any sense. So I've heard this one, and this is quasi realistic. Enes Kanter for Wes Matthews.
Yeah, and obviously because I mean I've had. I wouldn't say man crush. I've admired Wes Matthews, especially when he was at Portland. Just, you know, the way he plays, and I think the Achilles injury is pretty much behind him at this point. I don't know how much it's taken away from him. That one's certainly interesting. I also wonder too about Harrison Barnes. As bad as Dallas is, you can't consider anyone untouchable.
Harrison Barnes, he's been pretty good for them. You have to wait until, when is he trade eligible? December 15th, is that right?
December 15th. Yeah.
Harrison Barnes. for Enes Kanter, Cameron Payne, and I don't know what else you'd give him. Would you give him Robertson?
I don't know if I'd go that far, because again, I feel like Enes would go to Dallas and he would start putting up 2010s and it'd be, oh my gosh, the Thunder gave away another, you know, just like with Reggie Jackson and James Harden and, sure, and Ersan and all these guys that go somewhere else and suddenly their opportunity explodes. And
yes, Harrison Barnes has been good. He's been really good.
He's been pretty good.
He's been a lot better than people thought he would be. Wes Matthews has kind of struggled this season. He's only 31% from three, 42% effective field goal percentage. He is really not the same guy, although I would just kind of love having him in the city. He's also 30. It's a trade that like sounds really good in your head, but then like you like look at like really what you're giving up and then what's coming back, and I don't know. I think Dallas would probably still do it, but
yeah, I mean, and Wes is still 6'4". I mean, it doesn't,
right,
it doesn't do anything like we discussed earlier about moving Andre back to shooting guard and you know, bringing Big Vic off the bench. So yeah, that didn't seem like a path that they would go.
No, Chicago's another team that you look at, and it doesn't seem like Jimmy Butler's going anywhere.
No, probably not
for them.
Think we can scrub him and Anthony Davis off of some of the dream scenarios.
Yeah, for sure. And then I don't know what they would give if it's not Jimmy Butler, which sounds kind of silly, but Taj Gibson, Doug McDermott, I don't know. That's actually not doing anything for me.
Yeah. Yeah, and now you got to start thinking about three or four team trades to actually move pieces around, and my head starts hurting.
Yeah, I mean, the truth is, like, Dallas, I think you're right. Dallas does seem to make some sense. They need some scoring. They could use a young guy like Enes Kanter. And then, like, just there's just not a ton of great fits for Kanter after that, I don't feel like.
No. And it could take an injury somewhere in the league that opens up an opportunity. It could take something like that. But, I mean, honestly, New Orleans is another spot potentially where they could run him next to Anthony Davis. But, again, New Orleans doesn't have anything that is much of interest to anybody right now.
Oh, man, I know. And they picked up that guard from the Lakers draft. I can't remember what his name is, but he can't shoot.
Anthony Brown.
Yeah, Anthony Brown. Yeah, he can't. He's basically like every guy they picked up this summer. They can't shoot, and they are barely an NBA player. They're just full of those kind of guys. Next question from at D Tally Live. What does John Hamm do during the 1 hour per day he's not talking about basketball?
That's when I try to sleep.
I also think that it's when you're smoking ham.
It could be. I could be doing that. I could be catching up on Brooklyn Nine-Nine, which is what I did during my sick day last Wednesday. It's like, I'm going to plow through season three because I'm way behind here. So maybe there's a television show that I'm trying to binge and get caught up on. Something like that. Or lately, playing video games with the kids because they seem to enjoy that.
Oh, what games are you playing?
The kids are really into the Nintendo Wii, so we just got Super Smash Brothers, and my son's pretty psyched about that. I got Star Wars Battlefront. I don't know what I'm doing in it yet, but I'm having fun playing it. So
awesome. This is funny. I don't really know how to answer this question, but I thought it was really funny. From Tawo, T-A-W-O. How do NBA players recover so quickly after getting poked in the eye? It takes me a good 15 minutes to stop crying. Hashtag pro athlete.
Pro. Yeah. You know, they have access to the best drugs in pro sports. Ooh, so that helps.
That's true. This is from FLOA Myers. What are the clear strengths of Coach Donovan?
Things that I've heard people criticize him for, that, you know, he adjusts game to game. he adjusts in game, I think, a lot better than Brooks ever did. Mm-hmm. And especially game to game. And I think that's a positive thing. I understand that that means some guys don't have a consistent role night in, night out, but it's pro basketball. It's kind of the way it is. So, I feel like he probably relates to the players very well. I mean, in terms of like laying out, you know, what their role is and kind of, you know, kind of clarifies that. You don't hear of a lot of flare ups or a lot of like grousing about Coach Donovan.
No, and I mean, I think you just look at their run last playoffs. I mean, like you said, the adjustments game to game, his lineups, his creativity with using Robertson against the Warriors like he did. Man, he did a really good job, and he really knows his team. He really knows the strengths of his players. And he's in a way, the frustrating thing about him is why, like the exact opposite reason why we were frustrated with Brooks is that Brooks had the same rotation every game. You could like set a timer on your watch for whenever, you know, Durant was going to come in and out. But with Donovan, he's just trying stuff. He's like a mad scientist out there, just like trying to figure out what he's got. And things get weird sometimes, and things get really, really bad. And sometimes you're kind of pleasantly surprised by some lineups. And like he's just really just trying to figure out what he's got. And I think that's one, so that he knows, you know, what he can do down the stretch of this season and in the playoffs. And then two, like the trade market, like what are they going to do with a lot of these guys? What is like Sam Preston needs to know, like, what do we have in these guys in game? And who's going to fit and who doesn't. So I think that, you know, those are clear strengths that he has, and he's only in his second year as a coach. Like we need to like give him a little bit of time to develop as an NBA coach as well.
Right.
So, next question, how many players on the roster do you see being here in 2 years' time?
In 2 years' time, let me get this pulled up here. Okay, I'm saying Steven Adams is the Thunder for life, yes. Basically, as long as he wants to be. And it has more to do with, you know, just obviously he does some things on the basketball court, which are very valuable. But I think just his general attitude about things is highly valued. I'll say Domas,
yes,
is going to be here. I'm going to go ahead and say Russ is going to be here.
Okay. Yeah, me too.
I really do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think like those are the only guaranteed guys.
Yeah, I honestly do. I think just about anybody else situationally could be elsewhere if necessary. Maybe Abrines.
Yeah, another guy. Maybe Abrines. Yeah. Maybe those four. I mean, Andre Robertson, we have no idea about his summer. Oladipo, like, again, I really like his game, but it's not a clean fit with Russell Westbrook. And if there's the right deal that comes along, he could be gone. Anthony Morrow's not going to be here. Jeremy Grant, maybe. I mean, if they lock him up this summer, he's a guy.
And that's not to say, like, you know, Domas and Alex are untradeable.
Right.
I just don't think that.
You're not going to get fair value for them on the trade market, I don't think.
Right. Or it would take some type of a blockbuster-type deal to come along for those guys to be included, and I just don't know if that's actually going to materialize.
And Kyle Singler might be here just because he is.
Yeah, there's that. Although, I'm gonna say if they're not able to trade him, I think this summer they could very well just buy him out. At some point, they're going to need the roster spot. And at this point, I just don't see how he's going to turn into a usable NBA player for this team. I just don't.
No, I feel like they've kind of given him his last chance. And I mean, he's just has been so bad. I don't know what else to say. I mean, his on off numbers are kind of hilarious because he looks like a quasi competent NBA player, but like all the rest of his stats are just garbage, and he has not looked good on the court. It's definitely a mental thing. Like he wasn't in some like crazy car wreck or something. Like he just like mentally like has not been able to do it. So kind of sucks that they invested so many years in him.
Yeah. I mean, that's one of those, if I understand what they were trying to do, if he would have turned into a rotation player, now you've got a guy locked up. But again, below the mid-level exception salary, right. You've got a guy locked up for $5 million a year as a rotation player. I understand what they were going for, and again, this is a team that loves to lock in guys. It was a gamble that they took. Sometimes those pay off, and this one didn't. I mean, and it sounds bad because of, well, $20 million of the contract is guaranteed, not 25. The last year is team option. It sounds like a lot of money. As the economy is growing in the NBA, it's not all that bad, but it's still not ideal to have a lot of dead money on your books.
No, it's not. And I don't know. He's probably pretty awkward in the locker room too, I would imagine. So they,
yeah.
We'll end with two random questions from at Winskill 1969. Your top five sodas or pops or whatever you call them.
Mine would probably be all the different varieties of Mountain Dew.
Okay. I don't drink soda anymore, supply. John. I don't know.
Oh yeah?
I'm a water, coffee, or beer man.
Yeah. Yeah. I've been through that phase before. I should probably go back to that phase, to be honest with you, but I don't know. It's just my thing. If Mountain Dew releases a new flavor, I've got to try it. So
I've always been a Dr. Pepper guy, though. If I went back to soda, Dr. Pepper would be it. And that's all. I don't know that I'd have a top five.
I've had my Coke Zero phase. I've been in the Coca-Cola variety, but I mean, over the past year or so, and I've done this in life. In high school, I was a Mountain Dew drinker. You know, I kind of got away from it, and now, of course, it's Diet Mountain Dew for the most part. But
was this a Russell Westbrook move for you?
It honestly wasn't. I don't know. I've just always been a Mountain Dew guy, dating back to high school, even. So their kickstarts, I have a kickstart each day.
Oh man!
So
we need to get a Mountain Dew sponsor. For John
Hamm. Work on that.
Last question at Kale Fussell. Who y'all got for Bedlam? There's Bedlam right here on the pod right now. I don't know that either of us can be unbiased. Not that we're ever unbiased anyways, but.
Yeah. So let me say that there are points during the season I said that OSU was the best team in the Big 12.
Oh.
I honestly felt that way even after the Central Michigan fiasco.
Oh, that's stupid.
Yeah, so stupid. But still, being in Norman, I feel like OU's probably, if they're probably going to be favored for this game, they should be. As long as Bob Stoops does not repunt at the end of the game, I think the Sooners should win.
I'm going to have to go with the Pokes, man, for no reason other than I just love them.
Yeah. Yeah. I understand how that goes.
This is one of the biggest Bedlam games ever. It's going to be super fun.
Yeah, absolutely. And just think about this. Going forward, with the Big 12 championship game going back in, these two teams would have to play again the following week.
Oh, man. That would be
pretty... Isn't that just stupid?
It is incredibly stupid.
It's just so stupid. Oh, the Big 12 just makes me so sick sometimes.
I tend to just stay away from it mostly, unless I just watch OSU football. So I'm OU football. I really did enjoy watching Texas lose on Saturday.
Man, yeah, I tuned in at the end of that one, and obviously we have a lot of fun at Charlie Strong's expense.
I know.
I felt for him in that post-game interview. When he was asked, what does this mean for your future? And his response was just, that's tough.
Yeah.
But
that was sad. John Hamm, thanks for coming on the pod. Happy Thanksgiving. Follow John on Twitter at John M. Hamm. Read his articles on Bleacher Report. Listen to him on the radio. John is everywhere. You can have as much ham as you want. Enjoy your Thanksgiving ham. Thanks, John.
All right. Thank you.
Welcome to the Down to Dunk podcast. This is your host, Andrew Schlecht. With me today, Nikki Kay. Nikki, how are you?
What's happening, Andrew? I'm pumped to be back on this pod just a couple of days before Turkey Day.
Yes. I can only think about one thing right now is, have you been to Chick-fil-A? And
I'm waiting for our live Down to Dunk podcast from Chick-fil-A where we can add one more thing that we need to plug at the beginning of the pod, you know, and maybe like just like how you guys have a hot ham segment, maybe yes. We can do like Nikki K's Filet or something. I don't know. Filet.
You haven't been.
No, I haven't been. I'm not about to go to Chick-fil-A by myself too. I'd like to see to have some advice on what I need to order when I do hit up the Filet for the first time.
Okay. I'll give you a pass, but we have to make this happen soon.
Okay.
Also, I think on the last pod that we did remotely, you declared it the year of the singler. How are you feeling about the year of the singler so far?
Well, let's just say since we've last talked, the float tank revolution has not taken place, among many other things. You and I were just talking about all that's happened in the last time we've chatted, including a new president. But I'd say I'm a little more disappointed that the float tanking has not been a wide sweeping, revolution throughout the country.
I know. I mean, the preseason looks so promising. Like it looked real. We even put all of our hands together at a Friday pod and chanted Kyle's name. It was all for naught.
And also, yeah, I mean, I think though at the, I don't know if I said this on the live pod, but heading into the season, I had him at an over under 2.5 for hairstyles on the season.
Okay.
And I think we've gotten through 0.5 in terms of changing the hair, because now we're doing more of just like the straight slick back mop. I don't know. I need to see it up close, but
he did shave the sides though. I think we can give him two, right? He did the comb sides, shave sides. That's two, right?
Perfect. All right. So then he's looking strong for the over at this point, huh?
Yes. At least we're hoping so. Yeah. He's shooting 12% from three right now.
Oh, boy. Oh. You know, I believe he's the last, or his season high minutes, what? It was 13 with Brooklyn, right?
Yeah.
Or no, he might have played more with Golden State. He had a season high 6 points against the Warriors, so...
high 6 points. It's a good sentence.
Did you know also though, on the, a little straying from singler, just a little bit, I guess Morrow hasn't hit a 3-pointer.
Right.
Yet either. So.
It's so weird. That's so weird for him. But he's played productive minutes at times, but it didn't even cross my mind until John Hamm tweeted that.
Yes. And What are your thoughts on Anthony and his role in the rotation at this point? Because I mean, it's easy for local, I think, fans to look at his role in the game and say, you know, why isn't he playing more? Do you have the same frustration with his lack of experience in the game, or do you see why Billy?
Well, I don't know that I would say that I had like the same frustration about it. Because I at the beginning of the season, I was like, I don't really see the minutes for him, especially if they're using this season as like a developmental season. Like they just have too many guys that they have like something invested in. Like they have a lot invested in Alex Abrines, maybe not money wise, but like role wise, like they really want to get this guy going. Alex Abrines is 23, Anthony Morrow's 31, Anthony Morrow's in the last year of his contract. You know, I mean, I think he's being used like I thought he would be, just kind of like, things aren't working, let's see if Anthony Morrow's hot.
Yeah, can come in and bring a little breath of fresh air. Mm-hmm. I agree with you. And also, you could argue it has to do with a lot with the matchup, right? Like, who he will be defending on the court, but then... You know, the counter argument to that is, okay, so at what point do you need shooting more than what he isn't giving you on defense?
Yeah. Yeah. And it's just like I said, a 31-year-old who doesn't who's barely a rotation player. It's kind of hard to see where he fits. So, Nikki, you brought up this idea before we started. And I thought this was a great idea to go over what we're thankful for with this Thunder team this season. And it's probably a good exercise for everyone to go through since it's been kind of a rough patch. So
let's give thanks.
Let's count our blessings. Let's give thanks.
Exactly.
Nikki, what are you thankful for with this Thunder team?
Okay, I'm going to start off on a little bit of a lighter note. Every time I listen to your guys' pod and the intro, I think one of the most underrated parts of it is the way Steven Adams says complexion. that I'm so thankful for that because it makes me giggle every time. It's when Enes Kanter mistakes himself for Kevin Durant.
Yes.
Adams goes, oh, different complexion. Complexion? I'd like to hear you guys take it on. But yeah, he says it beautifully.
Oh, man.
So I'm thankful for that on this Thanksgiving week.
Yes. There's so many things about that intro that are just so great. I mentioned this before, the fact that he says Pongcast cracks me up every time. And there was like no perfect take, which was also just perfect. In so many ways.
You had to leave it raw.
Yes, it was so good. Okay.
Mm-hmm. What are you thankful for?
I'm thankful, and I should have shared this with the Kyle Singer, but I'm also very thankful for it because I laughed literally out loud when I saw this five-man lineup. So,
okay.
Russell Westbrook, Victor Oladipo, Kyle Singler, Andre Robertson, Steven Adams are a +9 in their minutes together. I think it's only like 13.
That's the starters without Sabonis, right? Essentially, yes. And they're +9. Okay.
With Singler instead of Sabonis. they were a +9, which I thought was, I was like, well, that's weird because it's like one of the best lineups. But they're shooting like 16% from three, 36% from the field. Like they turned the ball over 5 times. It was like everything was bad about it. But they were a +9, and Russ just hit like a ton of free throws. So it like just like skewed everything because Russ was able to get to the free throw line a bunch. But everything sucked about it, and I just thought it was hilarious. And I'm so thankful for that lineup.
And that's as Billy Donovan might say, that's why the numbers don't tell the full story of what's going on. But you know. I'm thankful for is when I'm at shoot arounds or practice and I get to just watch Alex Abrines shoot threes. It's something about his lanky arms and the way he's able to, because he doesn't have that that Moro, you know, quick release, but it's still so fluid and beautiful. I'm thankful for Abrines and his shooting ways from the outside.
He hasn't shot the ball particularly well in game, but he's shooting great from the free throw line, and you can just tell like he's going to put it together at some point.
Exactly.
And I really like him. I think if he's not going to be this skinny forever, and he just knows how to play basketball.
Sorry. Go ahead.
I was going to say he just knows where to be. He knows how to play. I think that he just needs more minutes to kind of figure some things out. But he's going to be a huge piece for this Thunder team going forward, especially a team that's just desperate for long range shooting.
Exactly. And I think that he could have very easily come into this environment, this situation, and displayed a lack of confidence. And I do not think that's what we've seen from him. And I think that, like exactly what you said, that it's only going to be a time before things start becoming even more fluid than his beautiful shooting stroke.
What are your thoughts on his facial hair?
Oh, man. I feel like it's very European, right? I feel like it's his best attempt at a full beard. Maybe it was No Shave November, but I don't think we'll be seeing him trim it anytime soon. It's pretty sparse scraggly, but you know, if that's what makes him feel more manly out there on the court, then we'll give it to him.
That's, I know, what makes him feel more manly.
I feel bad. I know he also said he missed, you know, the Spanish food, and it was that he had his parents in town, and he was really looking forward to having his mom prepare him some Spanish cuisine and stuff. But you know, you got to give credit to the kid for holding his head high, being out here in completely different environment and playing like a competitor. I'm thankful for that.
What about Joffrey's beard?
Joffrey's got a full beard. I like Joffrey. I like what he's doing out there on the court, right? Do you feel a sense, how do you feel when he has the ball in his hands, especially from the outside?
When he doesn't hesitate and lets it fly, like, I mean, obviously you kind of have to feel pretty good about it. Like, he's, as a big guy, he's shooting 36% from three, which is pretty good.
Yeah. We'll take it. We'll take that little breath of fresh air every once in a while.
Yeah. He's taking charges. Like, I feel like he just, like, soaked up, like, all of the Ersan Ilyasova that he could while he was on the team and is, like, using his Ersan powers right now. Because he's been a fine player. He's been a lot better than I thought he would be.
Are you equating Joffrey to one of the little aliens from Space Jam who sucked up all the talents of the NBA?
What's hilarious is that he would pick a declining Ersan Ilyasova to suck the powers from.
Hey, I mean, you got to recognize the talent when you can spot it, though. So, no, I think he's been a pleasant surprise for a lot of Thunder fans, if I go so far to say that. But I'm thankful for Joffrey, too.
Yeah. What about Jeremy Grant? And yesterday, okay, this is kind of a sidebar. Yesterday, I learned that Jeremy Grant's nickname is Moo Moo, that his family calls him Moo Moo.
Wait, I wonder, did you get the backstory on that?
Well, okay, so here's the backstory on how I found out. I went to a bank yesterday to make some accounts for my sons. They're real little, uh-huh. and we're just putting money away for them. And the guy who was helping us create these accounts was, he used to play for OU. He won like a Big 8 title in like 1985. And then he went on to be Harvey Grant's like accountant. And like knew like all these guys, and so like he knew Harvey Grant and obviously his sons, and like their kids all grew up together, but they called him Moo Moo. Anyways,
you learn something new every day.
Every day, and,
I think Jeremy fits in very well with the identity of this team, big picture, long term. I know a lot of people were confused when Ersan was shipped off because he was such a, you know, immediate source of scoring for this team. But I think one thing that people keep forgetting is what Sam Presti said on July 5th. He said, we are not going to be reactionary to, you know, the absence of Kevin Durant. Mm-hmm. And it's all about the long-term big picture. And I love his athleticism. I love his length. And I kind of get a feeling that he's clicking well with the team too at this point. He's one of the few players I haven't gotten the chance to, for some reason or the other, when I'm at media scrums, he's not the one speaking. So I haven't gotten to actually hear him talk, you know, in person, but it's fun to watch him, especially when he shows those athletic displays, dunking, and I mean, he's got strides to be made, but that's what the Thunder development team is all about, right?
Oh, no doubt. And he's only 22, and mm-hmm. he already has the second most blocks on the team, even though hasn't played as many games as everybody else. He has 13 blocks on the season, which is really just saying more that the Thunder just aren't a shot-blocking team anymore than anything else. But he's playing over his head right now. Like, he's shooting 53.8% from three. That
well,
just can't
that's
continue.
A little huge. Just a tad.
I think he has the highest effective field goal percentage of anybody on the team right now. I mean,
well,
that's,
Moo-moo.
Do your thing, Moo-moo.
Yeah, do you, Moo-moo.
I mean, I don't really know what to say about it. He's also shooting 44% from the free throw line. And that's been pretty brutal. But, yeah, I mean, I like him. He's like your typical, like, Sam Presti player, like, yeah. Raw athlete.
Raw, has exactly.
Has these gifts that, like, I mean, not many people in the NBA have. But he doesn't have a great feel for the game. He can dribble a little bit better than I thought he could.
Yeah, I didn't think he was great with the ball in his hands coming into the situation. But, you know, like we said, we could see a little bit of growth in that in the near future.
Yeah, he can drive a little bit. But yeah, I like Jeremy Grant. I think that he's a good fit. I wish they play him at the four more. But it's kind of hard whenever you have all these big dudes that you feel like you have to play.
All the bigs, so many bigs.
So many bigs. Just not much defense, but so many bigs.
I'm thankful
that Victor Oladipo seems to be fitting in a little bit better. Like, he seems to be figuring it out.
Yeah, and you know, I wanted to ask you your opinion on this, because what I've noticed is in the words they choose to talk about his, when he does have frustrating performances in games, it's, you know, Russell and Billy talking about how they want Victor to be more aggressive, and especially in initiating offense when he is asked, you know, to lead the second team at point. But then you hear Oladipo talking and, you know, he'll throw out the word confidence. So do you think that there is a difference between aggressive and confident, or do you think it's kind of all related? It's feeling out his role. I think that he needs people who believe in him. And I think that Russell is definitely demonstrating that. Mm-hmm. But I wonder what this kid needs to really start clicking consistently.
I think that with him, the aggression and confidence kind of go together. I think you can look at players like Dion Waiters, where there's like a disconnect between the two. And that's really why I love him, is that there's like a complete disconnect between confidence and aggression and like what should really be happening. But I think they do go together, because he disappears. Like, there's no doubt about it. Like, on the offensive end, there are times where he is content with just sitting out on the perimeter and really not doing much of anything but being a floor spacer. And that shouldn't be his role, especially on the second unit. Like, he should have the ball all the time. He should be running pick and rolls, pick and pops, trying to get to the basket, trying to get his teammates involved. But a lot of times the offense is just dead without Russell Westbrook out there. And it shouldn't be. It really shouldn't be, because Oladipo is capable of being like a go-to player in spots, especially against other second units. Like, he should be feasting on these other guys. But for whatever reason, he is kind of like slowly integrating himself into, you know, this Thunder team. And, you know, he's made his presence felt in a few games. But there are just times where he disappears. And I don't like that, like seeing that from him. But he does seem to kind of bounce back. When he played against Detroit, he was really bad. Everybody was bad against Detroit. But then he had that monster game against Houston. And he played awful.
And a solid performance with Brooklyn. He had a solid performance against Brooklyn, too, right?
No, he was great against Brooklyn, and then he had a so-so game against Indiana, although his assists have really ticked up in the last three games. He had 5 assists against Houston, 6 against Brooklyn, and 6 against Indiana. So that shows a little bit more that he's taking on that role. Also, with Samaj out, he has to do that.
And if you could see, if he could, you know, average 20 points a night for this team, that's what the Thunder need. And like, also in addition to what you're saying with him being able to aggressively initiate offense when Samaje Christian's out, and I think you're right, it all roots into confidence and that assertiveness. But he was, I mean, if I recall, he wasn't the most consistent player at Orlando, and that was due largely to, or what people said it was due to, the players he had around him and the differing roles he was kind of thrust into with that team. So you can hope that with this Thunder squad, he's at least able to settle into a more consistent role night in, night out. He knows what he's being asked to do, and he can play with confidence that way.
Yeah, and he's been, his shooting has been a kind of a surprise. Like, he's been shooting the ball really, really well for the Thunder. He has the highest effective field goal percentage of his career. He's shooting 41% from three right now, and I think a lot of it is that he's just being set up really well with Russell Westbrook. Yeah. He's shooting the ball really well when Russ is on the court with him.
Yes.
And I mean, that's a lot of what the Thunder have wanted in a two guard, is this guy that can defend and that can shoot threes. And maybe, like, the Thunder, this, like, the whole Thunder fan base has been so spoiled by, like, these, like, incredible superstars. But, like, when you, like, look at what Victor Oladipo's done this season, like, a lot of people would say he's been kind of a disappointment. 17 points a game. The thing that's kind of disappointing for me is the steals. Like, he hasn't been getting in the passing lanes quite as much. Maybe that's just because he's staying solid more than he did in Orlando, but... he's not averaging a steal. And last season, he was at 1.6. So maybe you can watch for that to go up. Shooting, you know, like I said, 41% from three, 2.5 assists, 4 rebounds. Like, he's been a good player for OKC. It's not like he's been just garbage. It's just the times that he disappears are the times that the Thunder need him the most. And that's kind of been my biggest beef with him. But overall, like, I feel like he's been pretty good.
Yeah, no, and I mean, it's interesting you bring up the steals, because I think that could also be a part of the larger issue with this squad right now, in terms of the defense, right? Billy Donovan will keep mentioning the team being off on the pick and roll coverage or off on defense. Something is not clicking on defense, especially in the team's slow starts with games. The defense just isn't there. And whether it's a focus thing, whether it's a sense of urgency thing, but also, you know, on the topic of steals, Billy earlier this season said that, you know, steals come when you're in the right place at the right time. So maybe Oladipo's lack of steals is kind of reflective of the whole system being kind of out of place, and, you know, maybe once things begin clicking more. And I wonder if a lot of that defensive the issues on defense is a part of the anchor Steven Adams being a little bit out of alignment as well in terms of his focus. And I don't really know exactly what his off nature in games is being attributed to, but it could also be, you know, just a part of a whole big picture sort of deal.
Yeah, the defense has been weird. Like, they're like, they're fifth in defense right now.
Yeah,
which, that sounds really great, but, like, when I watch that team, it's like, how are they fifth in defense? Like, I'm like, I just don't get it. Like, watching the Indiana game, and if someone told you, like, this is the fifth best defense in a 30-team league, I'd be like, okay, well, everybody must really suck at defense. Like, I'm not, yeah. I don't.
Fifth in what?
I don't really get it. But the thing that has been good, and they haven't done this largely on steals, but they do have the fourth, they do average the fourth most fast break points of any team in the league, which has been good. And then points off turnovers, I think they're sixth in the league. So, like, they're doing what they should be doing, is that they just need to run. Like, they have their half court offense has just been pretty bad. Like, they don't really have any guys to run off screens, that can shoot off screens, and it's mostly just the Russell Westbrook show. And sometimes they'll swing the ball, and sometimes they won't. But they're consistently getting on the fast break, which has been really good for them. So I think that they could. And I think that Victor could be a part of this, that they could be doing a little bit better as far as, like, points off turnovers and stuff like that. They should be a little bit more aggressive. Andre Robertson, Oladipo, and Westbrook should be generating a little bit more than what they should have. But they're not really not that far off from where they should be, in my opinion.
Yeah, and I think they're also aligning with all the numbers that you've just put out there. They're fifth in pace, too, right now. So this team's living up to the quote-unquote expectations of being a, you know, fast, young, athletic, run-and-gun sort of team. So I think that the issues that are not helping them in terms of being able to actually win games, I think that those are all a growth process. But like you, so if I were to ask you now, do you think that this team has hit its lowest potential in terms of what we saw against Detroit? Or do you think this team can still break down even more?
Oh, I think that should be as bad as they get. The defense was bad. They couldn't score. They were, you know, focused on individuals. They weren't passing the ball well. And this team is still really learning how to play together. And I think that's something that people miss a little bit. They're starting a rookie. They're playing three rookies minutes. I have all these guys that are under 25.
I think it's 11 under 25, because I was looking at the Lakers roster too, and the Lakers have 8 25 and under, and they're, you know, everyone's like, oh, the Lakers are so fun and fast and young. And I mean, I think it's easily overlooked just how much youth in this roster is really affecting the learning curve, you know, and yes, it's that's expected.
Yeah, and, you know, and the rookies have really impressed mostly. Like, Domantas Sabonis has been really good for the Thunder in his role. And Jonathan Sharks wrote an article for The Ringer that basically talks about how he is doing the exact opposite of what he was doing in college. In college, he was this guy that was down on the low block. He had a floor spacing four that gave him the room to do that. And now he's the floor spacing four that's out on the perimeter. So he's had like a complete role change, but he looks super comfortable doing it, which has been impressive. Because like most guys, if you tell them, like, we're going to do the exact opposite of what you did in college on offense, I think that most rookies would be a complete mess. But he's been impressive. And the Thunder, like, they've disappointed some and they've impressed some. They're just really who they are. Like, they're a 45 to 47 win team, and they're going to win games that they shouldn't. They're going to lose games that are just maddening, and they're going to, you know, beat teams that they should. And it's just, you know, the Thunder aren't going to be consistent because they are a young team. And we just kind of have to adjust our expectations accordingly. Like, we can't expect the world out of this team anymore. And, you know, we kind of have to be okay with that as this team kind of grows together and as Sam Presti kind of starts to form a roster that makes sense, because this roster currently, it doesn't make sense, and the Thunder know that.
Yeah. And I think adjust is the perfect word to use in terms of expectations, not lower. I mean, it's just, it's different now, and you can't go and replace a 30-point hole in your roster with the snap of your fingers, especially if you're Sam Presti, who is not being reactionary, is cultivating an organic culture. No, but trying to see how many Presti words you can fit in a sentence there. But I agree with you. And it's funny to me, because growing up a Lakers fan, and the role of expectations from, you know, the end of the Kobe era to now with this team. And the Lakers are 7-7, the Thunder 8-6, right? And they both have the potential to be fascinating teams to watch. And I don't know, if you don't mind me asking you, why are you proud to be a Thunder fan? Why do you take pride in having seen this team become what it was over the past 9 seasons?
Oh, man. I was not ready for this.
Getting philosophical here on a Tuesday.
I think I'm proud because they're a very process-oriented team, and they do a lot of things that make sense. They develop young players, they use the rookie scale deals, and they just, like, they're building a team that makes sense for this market. And that makes me pretty proud of this team, because they're not under any illusions that they're going to like clear all this cap space. We're going to go get Blake Griffin and we're going to do all this stuff and then like completely let down the fan base. Because like, let's just be clear, like the Thunder are most likely not going to get any kind of max free agents to come to Oklahoma City, even though we have Russell Westbrook, which is awesome. The Thunder are going to build this team through the draft and through trade, and that's how it's going to be. And
that's how it has been, right?
Right.
You know, and if I had I asked you that question before Kevin Durant left, before they lost in the Western Conference Finals, your answer would probably be very similar. You know, I'm proud to be a fan of this team. I'm not speaking as a fan. I'm just putting myself in. You've seen this team grow, and you've seen it, kind of be the underdogs and win in fun, wild ways. And I think that fans here could be excited if they look at it in a similar sense that, hey, we get to watch this thing build from the ground up again, you know, and it's not even the ground up. This is a reload, not a rebuild, you know, and it could be so much like the Thunder aren't a lottery team. They're not a championship team. They're going to be competitive though, and it should be really exciting to watch what unfolds. I think I you know, but then again, you're talking to a Lakers fan over here, so
I have a trade that I want to propose to you as a Lakers fan.
Okay.
Kyle Singler for Nick Young.
What? Are you kidding me? No.
Come on, please.
You keep your float tanking sounds like something that should be in LA, but no, Oklahoma. you keep float tanking and slick back hair.
What would you have said before the season started, though?
I would have said, actually, Nick Young was looking pretty good in preseason. I think he's having a little bit of a resurgence himself.
He's been really good.
He's a kook. They've got a bunch of kooks over there. And yeah. Did you hear about Meta World Peace and his I Love Basketball?
Yes, the chant.
That to me is I can't stop smiling when I hear about that. You know, like, and for, I guess, listeners who haven't heard before, Meta World Peace in between free throws, he was captured on camera doing this, you know, shoots one free throw. I believe he missed it. I'm not even sure. But he goes to high five his teammates, you know, how the guys do in between shots. And all of a sudden, out of nowhere, he just is looking at his guys like kind of eyes possessed. He's like, man, I love basketball. And that the Lakers have taken that on as their team mantra. And, you know, they beat the Warriors and they're all in the locker room after cheering, I love basketball. You know, they cheer it before their games night in, night out. And I think that is just so pure and simple and perfect. So I don't know. I really respect them for the brevity with which they're approaching their season.
It's super awesome. This Lakers team is really fun.
Yeah, exactly.
And the Thunder play the Lakers tonight. I guess we can preview that a little bit. The Lakers, it's been kind of hard to like peg what they are besides fun, because they have kind of fluctuated so much as to kind of the kind of team that they are. Like their defense was really hot at the beginning of the season. Then they're like giving up 118 points to the Bulls. And, but they've got like Luke Walton has been really good for this young core. Julius Randle, who I have like trashed a lot in the past, and it turns out that was all Byron Scott's fault. He's been really incredible for them, kind of facilitating the offense a little bit. He's one of their few guys that can score in isolation. Like, he's been pretty good for them. D'Angelo Russell, how do you feel about D'Angelo Russell's season so far?
Oh, I think he's growing every bit into the player that people had expectations for coming off of last season. I think Byron Scott also wasn't the most conducive coach for his growth
right
last season. You know, to put it simply, I like his confidence. I think he's also really buying into what Walton is bringing to the table. And I think he's also becoming mature, you know, which is going to say a lot in terms of being able to direct this team's offense moving forward. It's funny. The last time I was in LA and, you know, kind of keeping a close tab on this team, the biggest scandal that the Lakers world was talking about was the Snapchat gate or the, yeah, the Nicki Young fiasco, you know, and yeah, it's so funny to think that these two guys who had, you know, such locker room issues are now doing really well for this offense. I believe the Lakers have one of the top rated offenses in the league right now, top scoring offenses in the league, right behind Golden State. It could have changed in the last couple of games, but they, and you know what's more is that their bench is really strong. And I think what Luke Walton's doing is, and this is something I picked up from the LA Times, is that there's only three full bench lineups in the NBA that have played together 40 minutes or more at this point in the season. And the Lakers have one of them and the Clippers have the other two. And so it's, Walton has been very insistent on playing these second string guys together competitively, consistently, night in, night out. And it's, you know, a far cry from what Billy Donovan does. And I wonder, what do you think about that? Do you think Donovan should be more consistent with his rotations, or do you think he still needs to feel things out?
I kind of like Donovan's approach just because it's, yeah, there's so many guys on the Thunder that you're just like, I don't really know what they can do. Yeah. Like, I don't really know what, exactly, they bring to the table. Mm-hmm. But then with like the Lakers, like they're like, Lou Williams is kind of leading that team. He's a, you know, a 30-year-old guard. He's had a great season. He's shooting 43% from three, dishing out three assists. Like, he's been awesome. And I don't know. I mean, they've kind of pigeonholed Brandon Ingram as kind of this off-the-bench guy who will close sometimes. Yeah. And then Larry Nance, who I really like. I really like Larry Nance, a kind, yeah, of energy guy off the bench. And then they have all these guys kind of on the end that you kind of know, like, Zubac is a guy they're going to develop who's not really ready this season. Jose Calderon's on this team. Marcelo Huertas is on, yeah, the end of the bench. Marcelo. Thomas Robinson. Like, there's just a bunch of guys on there that you're just like, eh, like, we really kind of know who these guys are. And, you know, if somebody, yeah, gets hurt, they can come play. But the Thunder really, yeah, like, 1 through 15 have, they're like, well, maybe they could be a rotation player for us down the road. Like, I don't really know.
Yep. And exactly, like, Walton's doing a good job with what he's got. And I agree with you. I think that, especially after what we saw last season with Donovan's approach to rotations and how he used that as a strength during the playoffs, I appreciate his willingness to be flexible on a night-to-night basis. So I think that it is a little bit of different situations with the rosters, as you're pointing to as well.
Yeah. Predictions for tonight?
Oh, I think the Lakers are going to give the Thunder a run for their money. Then again, you look at the Thunder who've lost the last two and are probably, Sorry. They didn't, it hasn't been two in a row. It's just the Pacers, right? That, mm-hmm, they've dropped.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. I think the Thunder, you'll see a stronger start out the gate from them, though. It all depends. And D'Angelo Russell is still listed as probable at this point, right?
He missed the morning practice due to a knee injury, and his status for Tuesday's game against the Thunder is uncertain. That's what the current, okay, they're currently saying. That would be, would that be bad? I don't even know how bad that would be for them, because then you just,
exactly,
you play Jordan Clarkson more, you play Lou Williams more, like, both those guys maybe even be more ready to win. I think Russell's going to be way better than both those guys, don't get me wrong, yeah, but I just think that both, like, Lou Williams and Jordan Clarkson may be ready to take on more of a role, yeah, to beat the Thunder than Russell is.
And that's very true. And I also think, you know, this team hasn't showed too much of a wound without him in the lineup. They gave the Spurs a run for their money, and they tried putting up a good fight against Chicago, but Butler just went off. So yeah. I I think that, like what you said, especially also with what we've seen in terms of the Thunder facing Detroit and Indiana without some of their key guys, I don't think that missing personnel is really going to affect the outcome of how the Thunder head into this game.
Yeah, no, and the Lakers love basketball, so it should just be... It should be really fun for them tonight.
Man, I love basketball. I hope Meta gets some playing time tonight.
I do too. 37-year-old Meta World Peace. I can't believe he's on this roster. It's so awesome.
Yeah, he's, and you know, so I went to school at UCLA and he was always around Westwood. So, you know, I'd be shopping in Whole Foods and be like, oh, what's up, Meta? Or out at brunch and he'd be at the same restaurant. Really nice guy. Just one of those, you know, people who just kind of look that wide-eyed sense of like, okay, like, hey, you know, happy graduation. You know, just a super kind person from the surface interactions, but he can't help but you can't help but smile at his antics.
I love him. Even though, and I actually feel a little bit better about this now that he elbowed James Harden in the head really hard. at the time, I was not too happy about it, but he's great. I love Meta World Peace. Nikki, thank you for coming on the podcast today. We can follow you on Twitter at Nikki K. Watch you, if you are in Oklahoma City, watch you on KFOR. And you tweet out links to a lot of your stuff too, so just go watch her. She's great at what she does. You were like a 30 People Under 30 award or something like that you won recently.
It was an Oklahoma City honor for this California girl. So I'm very happy and blessed to be here. And on this Thanksgiving week, I give thanks to Oklahoma City.
Yes. We give thanks to you, Nikki, for coming on our podcast, and we will talk to you soon.
Yeah, whoa. And thanks to my Down to Dunk crew. They're awesome. So, thank you so much, Andrew. You enjoy your sweet potatoes and marshmallows.
Yeah. Thanks, Nikki.
All right, bye.